over the past, I believe, 9 weeks now, we've been delving into the vast subject of faith, the different aspects of it and descriptions of it. Today, I'd like to speak to you about the law of faith. Turn to Romans chapter 1. In Paul's salutation to the church at Rome, he declares that God had a gospel which he promised by the prophets contained in the Holy Scriptures. And that God, this gospel was concerning his Son, Jesus Christ, who was born in the flesh and declared to be the Son of God by the resurrection, and by the Spirit of holiness. Now, Paul says, by this Jesus Christ, we have received grace and apostleship for obedience to the faith among all nations for his name. And I found it very curious, not curious, that's the wrong word. I found it comforting to know that the Apostle Paul ended his letter with this same statement, for the obedience of faith unto all nations, in chapter 16. So, I want us to realize that we cannot be obedient to something if you don't possess it. You can't be obedient to something if you are not under its authority. You know, as American citizens, we are obligated by law to be under the rules and laws of this country. We're not under obligation to follow the laws that Russia has laid down. Y'all see that? We're obligated to. Now, that doesn't mean that every person in America does abide by the laws of America. I'd be willing to bet that there's not one person in America that abides by every law on the books. And by the same token, there's not one child of God that is able to keep every law that God has on the books. We'll get to that later. Whatever has jurisdiction over you is what you're obligated to resign yourself to. Now, we see that Paul goes on in Romans and he says that this is to all that be in Rome, in verse 7. Beloved of God, called to be saints, grace to you and peace from God our Father and the Lord Jesus Christ. That's peace from both of them. First, I thank my God through Jesus Christ for you all that your faith is spoken of throughout the whole world. Now that's amazing, isn't it? That Paul would tell a church that everybody in the world, the Christian world, I submit to you, and maybe even some that weren't in the Christian world, speak of their faith. That's shocking that a church would live out their faith like that. Now, Paul says in verse 9, "For God is my witness, whom I serve with my spirit in the gospel of his Son, that without ceasing I make mention of you always in my prayers." Now that's a great position for a church to be in, isn't it? To have someone praying for them. Now, he goes on and down and says one of the reasons why he's going to come to them, or he wanted to come to them, he says, "If by any means now at length I might have a prosperous journey by the will of God to come unto you, for I long to see you that I may impart unto you some spiritual gift, to the end ye may be established." Not born again, established. Established in what, Paul? Well, established in the faith of Jesus Christ. To continue in it, to reaffirm it, to reprove that. To, Paul says, that is, he describes it, that is, that I may be comforted together with you by the mutual faith of both you and me. Now, what does that mean? Have you ever found someone in your life, someone's come into your life, that you had the same idea, or you loved and you found fellowship around that? Paul's saying that basically, I want to talk with you about the Lord, and I want to be comforted together when you tell me about your experience with the Lord and I'll tell you about mine, because it's the same experience. Mutual faith. And that means they, both Paul and the church at Rome, had Jesus Christ as the object of their faith. It was mutual. They shared in it. And Paul says, I love being around people that love the Lord like me. I love people that have the same idea about God. I love people that like to talk about God the way that I do. I just love being with people like that. Don't you? I love it. And the end of that relationship, or the purpose, one of the purposes of the relationship, is to comfort each other around that mutual faith. Now, Paul's going to deal with a faith and develop this, I don't want to call it an idea, because it's more than an idea. Paul's going to develop both the substance and the evidence of faith in this book of Romans. But first, he's got to lay some groundwork. Paul says, I'm a debtor. I am a debtor, both to the Greeks and the barbarians. Now, we know that when Paul was shipwrecked on the island, it may have been Crete, I can't remember, but the barbarians come up and thought that he had done something bad. That's the reason why he got shipwrecked. And then Paul was warming himself by the fire and put some wood on there and an asp or an adder came out, a poisonous snake, and bit him on the hand. And then they looked at him and thought maybe he would have fallen down suddenly or swollen because of the snake bite, but he didn't. Paul just shook it off. And then they human beings are fickle, aren't they? First they said he did something bad, that he's had a shipwreck, and then they went from thinking that he was a horrible person to thinking he was a god, because he didn't swole or fall down sick because of the snake bite, and they called him a god. They went from one extreme to the other in just a minute, didn't they? That's how human beings are. But Paul said, I'm a debtor both to the Greeks and the barbarians. Now, did the barbarians do something for Paul to make him obligated to them? Did they pay any of his debts? Did the Greeks pay any debt to him? Pay off his debt? No. He wasn't indebted by them. He was indebted to them. He was indebted by God to preach the gospel to them. The only debt that Paul owed was to his Lord. Other people were the beneficiaries of that debt that he was paying off in by preaching the gospel in obligation to God. Now, that's how Paul was in debt to them. Now, he says that I'm a debtor to the wise and the unwise. And Paul says, as much as in me is, I'm now ready to preach the gospel unto you at Rome also. That meant that with as much faith and fervency that Paul could muster, he was ready to preach it to them as well. Now, Paul's not ashamed of the gospel. Are you? Are you? It is the power of God unto salvation for both the Jew first and also the Gentile and also the Greek. But Paul says that I am indebted to the Greeks and the barbarians. So we've got three groups of people here. I want us to think about this because this matters. I'm going to talk about the gospel and I'm going to talk about faith. I'm going to talk about the righteousness of God in the face of Jesus Christ. Paul says, I'm ready to preach the gospel to you who are at Rome. But it's the power of God unto salvation. That means it's consistent with and in accordance with that salvation. It's not how you get to be saved from hell to heaven, but it's in accordance with that. It's coherent with it. Now, Paul says that I'm ready to preach the gospel to you, and I'm in debt both to the Jews and the Greeks and the barbarians, and this gospel came to the Jews. But let's look at these three groups. Who were the Jews? Who were the Jews? Jesus was a Jew. The Jews were the ones that God gave His written laws to. The Jews were the one that had a great history of God dealing with them in blessings. They had been given all of His laws. They've been given laws to protect them, at the health laws, the governmental laws, civil laws, and worship laws. And God met with them there in that temple. The first was the tabernacle that God said, I'll meet with you there above the mercy seat. So God dealt with these Jews, and they were blessed beyond measure because God dealt with them. And they had God's, we find later on that they had the oracles of God, and they were blessed that way. But the other two groups are the Greeks. Who were they? Who were the Greeks? The Greeks were the were culturally refined. They were educated. They were those that had some form of morality. And they, you know, they washed, they were clean people, they had a good structured society, and they had laws with that. And these Greeks were refined culturally. Y'all get that? But their problem was they worshiped idols and they worshiped many gods, a lot of them. But who were the barbarians? The barbarians were people that even the that had no good manners. They were people that were just hard people. That's why they call them barbarians. They had no good manners. They were brutal as a people. And even the Greeks called the barbarians, they didn't even like them. They even considered them deplorable. The Greeks, the refined people, considered the barbarians deplorable. So, these three groups of people, the Jews, the upper echelon of the world because of the blessings of God, then the culturally civilized, and then the uncivilized down here on the bottom. And Paul said the gospel is for every one of them. The gospel has something to give every one of them. The gospel is for every one of them. Universally? Maybe. Maybe not. Let's find out. So, he keeps on going down here that no nation or people is excluded from having the gospel preached to them. No one's too good and no one's too bad. I want us to think that the righteousness of God is revealed by it. The righteousness of God is revealed by it. Look, Paul says in verse 16, "For I am not ashamed of the gospel of Christ, for it is the power of God unto salvation to everyone that believeth." No matter whether you're a Greek, whether you're a Jew, or whether you're a barbarian, it's the power of God unto salvation to everyone that believes. Now, to the Jew first, and also the Greek. For therein, that means in the gospel, in the preaching of the gospel, is the righteousness of God revealed from faith to faith. What does that mean? From faith to faith. Remember, we're talking about people that believe here, and it's the power of God to salvation to them that believe. Not in order to believe and be saved, but to them that believe. Now, he says that this righteousness of God is revealed from faith to faith. Notice, he said it's revealed. And didn't make it happen, but it revealed it. If I took my coat off, it would reveal that I have a long sleeve shirt on. If I took my shirt off, it would reveal that I have a belly button. You can't see it, but it's there. Okay? The righteousness of God is revealed through the preaching of the gospel. Now, what this does is, this is from faith, from the faith of the God-called, Spirit-led minister, to the faith of the hearer that got faith in the new birth. You see that from faith to faith. But that's not all that means. That means from the faith of the delivery of it internally by the Spirit to the external manifestation of it. That means God works in you both to will and to do of His good pleasure, and then you do it. Y'all got it. You got to have it internally for you to have it to display it externally. Does that make sense? Now, this is from having the law written in our hearts to us demonstrating that by the things that we do. This is to the understanding from having it written in our hearts to knowing who fulfilled the law. Y'all, are y'all with me? Y'all understand what that preaching does? It sheds light on Jesus Christ. It doesn't make Jesus Christ any stronger than He ever was. What it does is it sheds light on that life and immortality that He brought. It sheds light on the righteousness of God. Now, Paul says, it don't matter. He goes on to explain the universal. This from faith to faith. Have y'all ever known anybody and heard someone's name? Sonia tells me about people all the time that she works with that I don't really know. Okay? Some of them she talks about that I've never met. So I know their name, and when I finally meet them, I'm able to put a face with a name. Now, these people have got the righteousness of faith. Because they have faith. They've been born again, and the preaching of the gospel reveals to them how they got it and who got it for them and why they have it. And it puts a face with a name, and His name is Jesus Christ. And they expound about what He did, who He is, and how much He loves you. Now, faith is not what makes one just, because the just shall live by faith. Faith is not what makes a man just, but it is what the just live by. Y'all got it? Now, Paul will go on to expound more and more and more about this faith in the book of Romans and a lot of other books that he wrote. But certainly in this book, faith is a central theme. And Paul goes on in chapter 2 and 3, and he lays down that there is universal condemnation of all humanity. There's none righteous, no, not one. They've all fallen short of the glory of God. Their mouth is an open sepulcher, full of dead men's bones. That's our best. Whether you're a Jew, whether you're a Greek, or whether you're a barbarian. You know, it's easy for us to look at a barbarian and say, they're deplorable, isn't it? It's easy for us to see a feral person. That's what these barbarians are. Feral people. By our standards. And we all do it, don't we? We look at people and say they don't deserve God. You're right. They don't. But you don't either. And the Jews didn't either. But God loved them. And that's a difference. You know, we get in this thing about categorizing people, and Paul's saying this gospel is for the Jew, the Greek, and the barbarians. I think sometimes, I want you to think about this. Who is restricted from our duty to preach the gospel or the gospel? We're told to preach the gospel to every creature. That's not talking about dogs and cats and birds and cows and grasshoppers. It's talking about people. Are there any people that are unworthy to hear it? If you think someone's unworthy to hear the good news of Jesus Christ, then you have placed yourself as a judge. And then you yourself will be judged. You're not looking at yourself right. Paul deals with this all in these chapters of Romans. Because he says, who are thou that condemnest another? And you do the same things. Starts out chapter 2 that way. Therefore thou art inexcusable, O man, whosoever thou art that judgest. For wherein thou judgest another, thou condemnest thyself. For thou that judgest doest the same things. He didn't say you might do the same things. He said you do the same things. We need to get off of our high horse in thinking that this gospel is only to a certain group of people. From our estimation, this gospel is good for anybody to hear. We're not to judge who needs to hear it and who don't. Who's worthy to hear it and who's not. Paul says, everybody's needs to hear it. Now, Paul says, he goes on through this universal condemnation of men, and Paul said, it didn't matter whether you were a Jew, whether you were a Greek, or whether you were a barbarian, you are condemned by God. But by the same token, those that are born again, it doesn't matter whether you're a Jew, a Greek, or a barbarian, God's got somebody in all those groups. Out of every kindred, nation, tongue, and people. That means it doesn't matter where you were born. It doesn't matter who your mama and daddy were. It doesn't matter where you live. God's got a people everywhere. And I don't know who they are, but God does. That's why He tells me to preach it to everywhere, all people, not to exclude people from it. I've been convicted hard this week, Now, Paul says that these barbarians and these Greeks, they didn't have the law of God that the Jews had, but what they still followed the law that was written in their hearts. Now, who wrote it in there? God did. God wrote that law in their hearts, and they were following it even though they didn't have the written law on the tables of stone in that Ark of the Covenant that the Jews did. They had the written law, but some of them didn't have it in their hearts. Some of them did. That's why Paul later says they are not all Israel that are of Israel. Now, let's fast forward to Romans chapter 3. He talks about the advantage that the Jews had at the beginning, but let's move on to verse 19. Now we know that what things soever saith the law, it saith to them who are under the law. That every mouth may be stopped and all the world may become guilty before God, because everybody's under God's moral law. Therefore, by the deeds of the law, that every mouth may be stopped and all the world may become guilty before God. Therefore, by the deeds of the law, there shall no flesh, you hear that? No flesh be justified in His sight. For by the law is the knowledge of sin. Now, get this. But now, Paul's talking about right now. But now, the righteousness of God without the law is manifested, being witnessed by the law and the prophets. Even the righteousness of God, which is by faith of Jesus Christ unto all and upon all them that believe. So Paul is exclusionary, isn't he? He is excluding some people from this, and the people that he's excluding are the unbelievers. Now Paul says that this is the power of God unto salvation to them that believe. Now he says, even the righteousness of God, which is by faith of Jesus Christ, unto all and upon all them that believe, for there is no difference. There's no difference between a Jew and a Greek and a barbarian. If you believe, then God has blessed you to be born again, and you have that law of God written in your hearts. Written in your heart. And in your mind. Now Paul goes on, he says, for all have sinned and come short of the glory of God, being justified freely by His grace through the redemption that is in Christ Jesus, whom God hath set forth. Did you hear that? Who set forth this righteousness of God? Who set it forth? Did the preacher set it forth? No, he didn't. This says, whom God hath set forth to be a propitiation. That's a big word, isn't it? Who in here knows what propitiation means? Brother Ryan knows what it means. Anybody else? It means mercy seat. Mercy seat. We're going to talk about that a little while later. God set forth this mercy seat through faith in His blood to declare His righteousness for the remission of sins that are past through the forbearance of God. To declare, I say, at this time His righteousness, that He might be just and the justifier of him which believeth in Jesus. Where is boasting then? That seems like it's a out of place, doesn't it? He's talking about boasting. He goes from talking about the righteousness of God and faith, and he says, where's boasting then? Why did he bring that up? Bragging. Where's bragging at? He says, where's boasting then? It is excluded. Well, how is it excluded? By what law? Of works? Nay. That means no. The law of works doesn't exclude boasting. The law of works promotes boasting, doesn't it? It promotes boasting. But it doesn't exclude it, but it is excluded by the law of faith. The law of faith. Is he the God of the Jews only? Is he not also of the Gentiles? Yeah, of the Gentiles also. Seeing it is one God which shall justify the circumcision by faith and the uncircumcision through faith. Do we make void the law through faith? God forbid. Yea, we establish the law. I tell you what. Now, here is where we really need to talk about some stuff, because those that are born again want to keep the law of God. You've been born again? God's wrote those His laws in your mind and put them in your heart. In one place it says it wrote them in your heart and put them in your mind. So either way, He's got it covered in your heart and in your mind. God did that. Now, the problem is that we want to keep God's law, but we can't, no matter how hard we try. We can't. That's where Jesus comes in. Jesus came, the righteousness of God, and He came to fulfill the law of God. He took everything that God had laid down and He maintained it. He kept it. He fulfilled that law to the Bible says, a jot and a tittle. And you know what that means? That means the smallest little punctuation mark in the Hebrew language. You ever say, jot it down. That means the writing. And the tittle means an apostrophe is a small little thing. Jesus kept every part of every law that God gave. Now, Jesus was sent forth to fulfill the law of God because we couldn't. He's the righteousness of God. I mean, when it talks about the righteousness of God, it's talking about Jesus Christ. It's personified as Jesus Christ. Sent forth in this world to be a mercy seat. Now, what was a mercy seat? To those, I mean, He was sent to be a mercy seat to those who want to keep God's law but can't. Remember, God gives you the want to in the new birth. Now, the mercy seat was a buffer zone between God and the condemnation of the law. Remember back in Exodus, I believe it's in 32. I may have the chapter number wrong. But when God gave Moses instructions on how to build this mercy seat and the Ark of the Covenant, to put God's law in that box. And on top of the box, there was this mercy seat that stood above it, a buffer zone between the fulfilling of the law and the condemnation of not doing it and God's justice. And I want you to remember too, you can read a little bit farther down in Exodus where this mercy seat, it said this on top of the mercy seat is where I'm going to meet with you. Where I'm going to meet with you. And this mercy seat, it was taken and the blood of the bulls and the goats was sprinkled on that mercy seat on the Day of Atonement because it was in the most holy place and it was only viewed by the high priest once a year. But this, I don't want to get bogged down into that, but I want you to realize that this was a buffer zone and it was a picture of Jesus Christ who was able to stand superior to the law of God that we couldn't keep, that He kept, and that not only that He was the mercy seat, but that blood that was sprinkled on it by the bulls and the goats was pointing to Him shedding His blood and as the mercy seat, and that He would make an atonement for sins in the holy place, and God would accept that. Now, the purpose of the law was to point to the mercy seat. The purpose of the mercy seat was to help us remember that God has the law covered, and for us to always look at the mercy seat. There is condemnation in that law. Are you condemned in your heart when you do things that are not in accordance with God's law? When you break God's law, does it bother you? I hope it does. I'm glad it does, because it demonstrates that you have a conscience towards God, and it bothers you when you want to do good and can't. Paul dealt with that specifically in Romans 7. The good that I would do, I don't do it. The bad that I don't want to do, that's what I do. Paul gave you a very personal glimpse into his life, into his struggle. I want us to realize that God's children want to keep the law, but they can't. And so the preaching of the gospel points them to the one who did it. Now, Jesus Christ is superior to the condemnation that's contained in the law. And the condemnation that we feel because we don't keep it and can't keep it. That's where faith comes in. We're given faith in a new birth. We've said that multiple times, and I don't want you to ever forget it. God gave us a desire to keep His law, but we can't. He put His laws in our minds and in our hearts. He wrote them. And faith points us to Jesus Christ, who did what we still want to but can't. Y'all got it. Y'all hear that. That faith points us to Jesus Christ to do what we could never do. And putting our trust in Jesus Christ is admitting that we can't keep God's law even though we want to. Now, it's declaring that we are putting our faith in Jesus Christ who did it for us. You know, this is the law of faith. You know, God said, He didn't say, I'm glad. He didn't say, I'm going to put my law into their mind. He said, laws, plural. I'll put my laws, plural. That means more than one, into their mind. Not only did He put the law of condemnation in there and wanting to do good, but the problem is, if that was the only law, we would have no respite, would we? We'd only have condemnation. But He put another law in our members, in our mind, and in our hearts, and it's called the law of faith. To point to the one who did it for us. To look to Him for help when we struggle because we can't keep God's law. Now, He says, When one is subjected unto the law of faith, remember what a law is. When you're subjected to it, you're under its authority. You're obligated to keep it. Doesn't mean that you always will, but you're obligated to keep it. Now, when a preacher preaches Jesus Christ and Him crucified, He's telling you the reason why you're struggling in your life is because that you're trying to still keep the law and not pointing and not having faith in the one that actually did do it. Now, He says, when a man is subject to it and he humbles himself under the mighty hand of God and is obedient to it, there's no reason to boast. There's no reason. I don't care how many of the laws you keep. And there are people that keep more laws of God than others. Would you agree with that? I would. I know some great people that are humble and keep a lot of the laws of God. They don't murder. They don't steal. They try not to lie as much. And there's some of God's people I know that can't stop from lying. Isn't that funny? There's certain levels on this thing. But when you trust in the law of faith, it takes all boasting out of it. You can't look at somebody and say, well, they're not worth preaching to because they're just no good. They're not as good as me. Brother, you're not thinking about the law of faith. You're thinking about the law of works. And you're thinking you got it all shored up. Rich young ruler thought he had it all shored up, didn't he? But he didn't. Now, the law of faith is superior to the law of works. But it is not opposed to the law of works. I think that's where a lot of people get a miscommunication because they think that faith and works don't work together. They do work. They're in conjunction with one another. They're headed in the same direction. Y'all get that? Do you know that we're created unto good works? Did you know that the law of faith won't make you, it won't make you want to do bad works? It'll just tell you that you can't do all the good works, but you need to do as many of them as you can. And that law of faith helps us to realize that we do the works because they're good works. The works are good. We ought to do the good works. Now we do the works because we desire to please God. That's what we get in the new birth. Love, joy, peace, long-suffering, goodness, gentleness, temperance, faith. He said, there's not a law against any of those things in Galatians. He said, against such there is no law. The law of works is not against that. They work in conjunction with one another. the very second that you start trusting in your ability to keep the law of works, you've abandoned the law of faith. You never abandon, as God's child, you never are commanded or told to abandon the law of good works. You're told to abandon trusting in the law of works for righteousness. And looking unto the mercy seat. Because I don't care how good you are, the more you try to do good, the more you try to keep every law that God put down here. I mean, even the New Testament ones where it said, love your brother. Where it said, don't lie. How many times have we not demonstrated a love to our brother? How many times have we lied? What comes because of that? Condemnation. Condemnation. That's when we need to go back under the law of faith and say, Jesus paid it all. And that's not a license for us to abandon the law of faith and do whatever we want to do, or abandon the law of works and do whatever we want to do. They work in conjunction. I tell you what, we do the works because they are good. They are good works. God created us for them. We do that because we desire to please God. Don't you? Do you desire to please God? If you do, you've been born again. If your goal is to do the good work so that you will get good enough so that God will love you, you'll fail every time. You'll fail every time. The law of faith especially when we're condemned because we didn't please God today or we did something that we got chastised for. The law of faith keeps pointing us to our mercy seat, Jesus Christ. It keeps pointing us to Jesus Christ. Paul put it this way in Hebrews chapter 10, I believe. Looking unto Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith. Let's look to Him. Let's not think that this gospel is just for us at this little church on Sunday morning. It's worth giving to everybody. What they do with it depends on whether they got faith on the inside or not. And even if they do have it, they still might trust in their works. But the gospel of Jesus Christ points them to the one that can heal their wounds, heal the condemnation that they feel because they can't do right, because they can't keep God's law. And they feel the condemnation and the weight of that. I get scared when I just go to a regular courtroom for a traffic ticket. Don't you? This judge calls you up. What do you have to plead? Guilty. Oh, a lot of people try to convince them that they're not. But they are. A lot of times we try to convince God that we're not guilty, but we are. And the only relief for that kind of condemnation is Jesus Christ, who kept the law of God perfectly And we need to exercise the law of faith in our minds. I pray that this has been a blessing to you. If any here has a desire to join with this church, you may make your wishes be known. And I'm pointing you to Jesus Christ, our mercy seat. May God bless you, is my prayer.